Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me, not in person anymore, but back on the other end of a telephone, I'm not feeling it, is Jeff Rimbo. Jeff, I miss you, mate.
I miss you too. I tell you what, we had such a blast for those last 2.5 months, but I guess it's just a little precursor to what's coming Super Bowl week.
Yeah, we've got an exciting week coming up. Today we're going to look ahead to the Super Bowl just a little bit, but not too much because we'll be all over it next week. So we are going to look back on the championship games, but in terms of next week, myself and Jeff get to San Francisco on Tuesday. Straight away, we're going to head straight to the media center as soon as we land. We have a set that NFL Network have provided us on Radio Row, so we're going to film our podcast next week every day. So from Wednesday morning, you'll be able to download the Inside the Huddle podcast and watch it on demand on Sky Sports as well, and it'll be on NFLUK.com, so you can watch or listen next week, and we'll be doing it every day. All the way up to, we're going to record one Saturday, which will be available here in the UK on Sunday. So we're going to do 5 episodes from San Francisco. Jeff, we're moving it on. We're going to video and audio, and it's going to be a lot of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, because as you know, Neil, Radio Row is really where it all happens. You know, there's the team interviews in the morning and all that, but Radio Row is just it's really a circus of people and, you know, NFL stars and old NFL stars and movie stars and all of it. And we're going to have it all on video and bring it all to the fans back in the UK. What a wonderful thing for us to be able to do.
Yeah, we are going to be having some special guests join us as well. Myself and Jeff have been working through the contacts book. So we've got some guests lined up. We won't reveal all of them right now, but we've got some guests lined up, and I'm sure we'll have more because, as Jeff said, you know, it is like a who's who of the NFL. Last year, we were just about to start recording our podcast, and Doug Plank walks along and shakes Jeff's hand, and all of a sudden Doug Plank's in the podcast, and then the Jags walk past with Dwayne Gratz, their defensive back, and he's in the podcast. I mean, that's kind of how it goes, Jeff. We're always keeping our eyes peeled for people that we know and people that we can nab to join us.
And again, as many of the, you know, prominent players in the National Football League as you've interviewed over the years, Neil, it gives us an unbelievable contact base to just be able to grab guys as they walk by. Le'Veon Bell last year walking by, and you know, Coach Bermeil, we grab him and he gets on the show. I tell you, it's just really, I think, going to be a blast, and I think the people, the fans back in the UK, are really going to enjoy those podcasts. To be special.
Yeah, so we'll start recording those on Tuesday of Super Bowl week, and they will be available every day in the UK from Wednesday of next week. So let's start looking at the championship games then, Jeff, and we'll go with the AFC championship game. The Denver Broncos qualified for a record-tying 8th Super Bowl appearance as they recorded a 2018 win over the New England Patriots. First of all, as we set this game up, Jeff, what a defensive effort from the Broncos.
You know, and again, I went back on Monday, Neil, and looked at the tape again. And when you really take time and go through the tape and you see all the little things that Wade Phillips and his staff did, the defensive staff from Denver, it might be the best defensive performance I've ever seen on tape. And I say that because that was not a wounded or bad offense that they played against. They're playing against maybe one of the top 5 greatest quarterbacks of all time. They're at full strength at wide receiver. They got their offensive lineman back, and they just absolutely frustrated, hit, hurt, hurried, did everything to make Tom Brady play as poor a football game. And really, even at that, Neil, there were some throws he made that were just unbelievable throws. But he got hit more times than any quarterback has gotten hit all year long, 23 times in the game.
And that's telling, Jeff, isn't it? Because we're not talking about a quarterback who does a lot of 5-step and 7-step drops and hangs around in the pocket for a long time. That makes that number of hits that you talk about even more significant.
Yeah, because what was so amazing when you looked at it on tape, Neil, was that how well coordinated the back end was with the front end. They played techniques and coverages in the back end that made Brady hold the ball. And, you know, Von Miller made that statement, and, you know, it was really, it came out to be the, you know, the truth. He said, I don't need 2.3. I can get there in 1.8. And he was so fast out of his stance. And he's always had a great first step, but, you know, I really felt bad for Sebastian Vollmer and for Cannon, the right tackle. They just, they were overmatched the entire day.
It's funny how misleading stats are. I know when we talked in the broadcast, Jeff, you pointed to Von Miller, and I said, you know, DeMarcus Ware was kind of like, I'll meet you at the quarterback. They were coming from both sides. And DeMarcus Ware, if you look at the stats, just had half a sack. But he got seven hits on Tom Brady. I mean, he looked like he was jumping the snap count. A few times I was thinking that a flag was going to fly. They must have been timing it up just right.
They obviously had a clue, but, you know, it was interesting. A couple of times you saw Sebastian look around to the official and you know, give what we call Palmer, where he's got the palms of his hands up like, the guy's got to be offsides, right? Mm. They are so fast, and they really, that, again, was an indication of what happens when you have a quarterback who can't get away from pressure, and the launch point is always the same spot. Is those great defensive linemen in the NFL now, they just race to that spot. And, you know, even the inside guys, Wolf had a sack, you know, they really, I thought all of them played extremely well along the front, and the back end guys, Tlaib and Harris played much better than he'd played the last couple of weeks. You know, it looked like his shoulder was back to normal, and they lost, you know, over the course of the game, Neil, it was amazing. They lost both of their safeties.
Yeah.
Shiloh Kale had to come in and play, and it just didn't drop off. They just kept playing at a high level. So it was, you know, like I say, kudos to Wade, and you know, you know Wade like I do, and what a great guy. And then you want to see him, like he tweeted out after the game, pretty good year for me, went from unemployed to the Super Bowl.
Well, it's we'll talk about Wade for a second, Jeff, because he is the nicest guy you'll ever meet. He's a great storyteller. He's kind of like this grandfatherly figure, but I'll tell you what, Wade's got an edge to him. You know, I was spending that time with him around the draft a couple of years back. Wade felt he was kind of wronged for being fired. And Wade, you could tell, still had that little bit of bravado, that little bit of, I'm one of the best defensive signal callers in the NFL. Now, he has proven that time and time again wherever he's been, but yeah, don't let the sort of demeanor fool you. He's got an edge that you kind of need to oversee a defense.
Yeah, he does. And I can remember when he was the head coach at Dallas, going on the field at OTAs and minicamp and watching him coach. And he can be very soft-spoken, but he can climb up their backside if he needs to. And I think the players have a tremendous amount of respect for him, not only because of his knowledge and his all of his years in the game, but his competitive nature. He wants to win. You can see on the, as you watch him during a game, you know, you see him kind of celebrate on the sideline, and I'm just really happy for him because he's one of the really good guys in the NFL and comes from, you know, he's just like his father was, just a real down-to-earth, good, solid human being.
One more thing on the Denver defense, Jeff, then we'll move on to other aspects of this game. I was digging through the stats on Monday morning, and I noticed, and kind of gathered it by the way the game was going, but I thought, well, I'm going to explore this a little bit more. Denver had 7 3-and-outs on offense. They had one drive, which was 2 plays -4 yards that resulted in the fumble that led to New England's first touchdown. So there's 8 drives that never went more than 3 plays for the Denver Broncos, yet that defense didn't look tired.
No, you know, it was amazing that that's so tough to do when you play at Mile High. And their offense, in a lot of ways, didn't help them, like you say. They were not able to string drives together. They weren't able to hold, you know, and the hardest thing to do, Neil, and I think this is really important for the people to understand, the hardest thing to do in football is rush the passer. That is work. That is really hard work. And they just were relentless and kept coming, and they played a rotation, but they didn't. Miller and Ware were in there almost the whole time. And when you watch it, it's just incredible how, what great tenacity and how they played so well over those 65 plays they played.
Hmm. I knew Kevin Cadle was going to come for me after they won the game. I did stress before, that they needed either lights-out defense or Peyton Manning on the bench. Well, they got lights-out defense. But what did you make of Peyton, Jeff? Because you know, I think you said it after our broadcast. You said they got to the Super Bowl in spite of Peyton. I thought there were some throws that were better than in the previous round of the playoffs, but he missed a couple of touchdowns when he tried to stretch the field. It was a mixed performance, wasn't it? I think it's the best thing we could say.
Yeah, I think so. I think he threw the balls that he threw to Owen Daniels on the touchdowns were both good balls. Mm. But they were both balls that you know, a college quarterback should throw. Mm-hmm. He hit him on a double move and split cover two on the first one. And then he hit him in a double move outside against man-to-man with the linebacker on him. Collins beat Collins on the double move. But he was open, and there was not – I mean, those were 15, 18-yard throws that you got to make. What was concerning to me, if you're a Denver fan, it's got to be a concern to you still, is, you know, there was a lot of talk about how poorly his receivers had played the week before. And they had, I think, six or so drops. But they played their hearts out in this game, and they were making plays, like two of Emmanuel's catches, the first one on the hook that he has to go climb the ladder to go get – and then the one where he goes up over Malcolm Butler to get, those are phenomenal catches, and you're not going to get those every week. So, you know, I thought it was a combination of, yes, he did throw better. I agree with you really, particularly Neil, on the bootleg that he threw early in the game. Mm. I thought that looked like, you know, that looked more like Peyton of old. But still, he had a chance on a touchdown, late in the game, mm-hmm. didn't. Wasn't able to connect, and just getting the ball. It's just not the kind of arm strength, certainly, and the kind of ball that you anticipate when you talk about Peyton Manning.
No, Tom Brady went down swinging, Jeff, I think is the best way to describe what he did. He had ended up with 310 yards, the one touchdown towards the end with 12 seconds left to Rob Gronkowski, who had eight catches, 144 yards in that score. Gronk was on and off the floor. He was struggling clearly with the altitude and everything that goes with that at Mile High. But, you know, Brady, for all of his pressure and everything, he was kind of there at the end to try and lead his team into overtime. I guess, Jeff, that extra point miss was huge.
Yeah, and you know, it's so incredible when you think that here's a guy, Gostkowski, hasn't missed an extra point since he was in college, 500 some straight. And in, you know, a huge, huge game, it came down really to a missed extra point, because had he made that extra point at the end of the game, they don't have to go for two. They can tie it and play to overtime or, you know, again. So
Jeff,
you just never know.
Sorry, Jeff, just to interrupt you, because I think it's an interesting – there's two schools of thought – doing the rounds in America at the moment. One is that play made the extra point rule relevant and made it much more interesting. There are other people saying if you'd left the extra point alone, we'd have been in overtime and had a great overtime period. Where do you sit on that?
I'm not big on tinkering with the kicking game, and we've mm-hmm. talked about that in the past. But if that was your justification for changing the rule because you wanted to make it more of a contentious play, then you got exactly what you deserved, and you got exactly what you called for. And I think you had a statistic, Neil, that was, I didn't realize until you said it on the broadcast, how many have been missed this year. Mm. And, you know, when you consider that, they got out of the rule change exactly what they wanted it to be. They wanted a more true football play where there was an outcome. It wasn't just a gimme. And now that's, you know, exactly what you got.
Yeah, I think it was 71 missed extra points in the regular season compared to 8 the previous year. So Brady had a ridiculous throw, Jeff, didn't he, at the end? Down on fourth down.
that was unbelievable. I mean, they dial up bracket coverage. And, you know, for the listeners, bracket coverage is two guys playing, one guy inside and outside. So they had a defender on Gronkowski's outside. They had a defender on his inside. And they recognize the coverage, and the way you try and beat that coverage is to run through the middle of it, just try and outrun both guys down the field vertically. And Gronk got just a little bit of a step, not even a full step on him, but just about a half step, and Brady just dropped a dime right on him, and Gronk made the play. I mean, it was a phenomenal play. That's why I say, if you're a New England fan, you can be disappointed, but you can't be you can't think your team just didn't go out and compete, because they gave a heroic effort. Mm. And I know there's a lot of Brady haters, as much as there are Brady, you know, apologists. But regardless of what side of the fence you sit on, you have to have respect for the guy, because he got hit and hit and hit and just kept coming.
And Jeff, those hits were, I think part of that was because they didn't win on first and second down. We talked about this in the broadcast, but Brady and that New England offense, they faced a 3rd and 8, a 3rd and 14, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 13, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 13, 10, 10, 11, and a 4th and 10. I mean, it was time and time again, you're like, wow, these defensive linemen can pin their ears back now.
Yeah, and when you talk about third down efficiency, if you're 60% on third down efficiency, that's really good. But you're going to really have a hard time. I won't say you'll never do it, but you'll really have a hard time having that kind of third down efficiency, 60%, mm-hmm. when you're facing all what we call third and ultra longs, which are 3rd and 7 and plus, mm-hmm. right? So it really does play to the defense. And, you know, there's an old defensive saying that you win the right to rush the passer on third down by winning first and second down. And that's exactly what Denver did.
Yeah, Denver did. And they won that game 20-18. Let's move on to the NFC Championship game. And just to wrap up on the AFC Championship game, Jeff, I thought it was interesting after the contest on the field. I know NFL films caught the stuff that Peyton was saying to Bill Belichick about this might be my last rodeo. But I thought it was interesting to see how many players from the New England Patriots, from all different positions, were trying to seek out Peyton to shake his hand. You know, as we talk about his declining arm strength, all of the things that are clearly declining with Peyton Manning, the respect that's felt for him around the league has not declined one bit.
No, and that's a great point. And I think one of the things that players understand is, you know, you look in the mirror and you recognize that your day's coming too, and that, you know, I'll be that guy one day. Now, you may not ascend to the, you know, to the threshold that he has in terms of his recognition and respect around the league, but for every player, the game ends. And when you see that kind of respect being paid by the other players, I think that's an indication of, number one, how they feel about him, but number two, how they recognize that this may be his last one, and the opportunity to go over and shake his hand one last time is something that they're going to take advantage of.
Let's move on to the NFC Championship game then. So it was a close affair in the AFC, not the same kettle of fish in the NFC. So Carolina just romped away with this one, 49-15. They forced 7 turnovers from the Arizona Cardinals, and the main culprit was Carson Palmer, the quarterback for Arizona. 4 interceptions, and he lost a couple of fumbles. Jeff, this never got to be a contest, really, ever.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, Carolina comes down right out the gate and they kick a field goal and then they get another touch. And it was over, really, in the second quarter. And I just, you know, when we looked, when we looked at the game and the build up to the game, we talked about the key thing was going to be, could Carson Palmer play better than he did against, you know, Green Bay? And he didn't. And he played a better defense and a team that doesn't give second opportunities on turnovers. You know, if you throw the ball to them, they're going to catch it. If you leave the ball out and you don't secure the football, they're going to knock it out and recover it. So, you know, again, when you play loose like he played, that's what happens. And Carolina is an interesting animal to me, Neil, because when they get going, it's like an avalanche is happening. You can't stop them on offense. They are so aggressive on defense. They play good in the kicking game. You know, they won all 3 phases of the game, clearly.
Yeah, I think they have that look, don't they, Jeff, of an 85 Chicago Bears or the 49ers in their day or Dallas when they're those teams that when they turn it on, they are a dominant team, and they're clearly the dominant team in the NFL. The Panthers, to me, when they first half against Seattle, first half against the New York Giants, all of this game against Arizona, they actually put together a complete performance. When they switch it all on, you can see why they're favorites to win the Super Bowl.
No question. And there's not a part of their game that they're deficient at. You know, Graham Gano, the Scottish kid, they got the kicks for him. You know, he, I think he leads the league in touchbacks. So you're, you know, you talk field position. It was interesting because my son tweeted this to me during the broadcast, what Arizona's starting field position was in the game. And I think their first six drives, the 21 was their best starting field position. And that leaves you 79 yards to go against a great defense every time you go out there to play. And that's just, you're not going to have great success when you're faced with that kind of field position. And then, you know, you look at the other side, and Carolina gets great field position. Big return by Teddy Ginn, you know, turnovers, all the things that let you play on a short field and make it tough on you.
Offensively, we probably saw everything that we knew Carolina to be. They were strong in the running game. There was some zone read. Cam Newton had 47 yards and two touchdowns. But off the back of that, Jeff, this is one of the more vertical and more explosive offenses in the NFL. They can score from long range.
Yeah, and, you know, I think really when we talk about Carolina, the area of their football team that nobody really is saying anything about is that offensive line. They have really, especially these last, down the stretch, you know, the last half of the season and into the playoffs, they have played extremely well. They have, you know, resurrected Michael Orr's career at left tackle. You know, Khalil, we talk about all the time. He's recognized as one of the better centers in the league. Trey Turner's coming into his own now at right guard. And then they got those two, you know, free agent guys that Remmers, and they can all pull. They're all good pass blockers. You know, you see Cameron go back there. He very rarely feels pressure. And, you know, so when you can run it and throw it, and all the things that they can do, all the screens, the sweeps, all of the, you know, they're really a throwback team in some ways on the offensive line. They do some things that we haven't seen in football for a lot of years.
The Arizona Cardinals are more than good enough to come again in 2016, but you've got to look at Carson Palmer's performance, Jeff, and be disappointed. I know that pressure can affect decision-making, but I thought the interception, just after Cam had thrown his interception, his only mistake really of the game, Carson Palmer doesn't even see Kurt Coleman just sitting there as the safety in the end zone. You know, I think you've got to be, for somebody who's so meticulous with his preparation and so always seems to be so in control, Carson Palmer's had a couple of shaky weeks. And I wonder actually if his finger's more injured than we think, Jeff.
I think there has to be something there, because here's the guy that had just a phenomenal year. And, you know, it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't he had a couple of weeks of great play. He played well all the way through the season. Then he got to the playoffs, and we saw a different quarterback. And, again, Neil, whether it was the finger or the pressure of the playoffs or combination of both or whatever, but obviously you're not going to win playoff games. The deeper in, you might win a few or an early playoff game when you don't play well at quarterback, but it's hard to win the whole thing if you're not playing well at quarterback. And that's, again, where Arizona stubbed their toe and went home.
The final exclamation point on this game was put on by Luke Kuechly, second week in a row with a pick six. His instincts are off the charts, aren't they, Jeff? I mean, I know he's athletically very, very good, but he seems to always be in the right place.
Well, it's what you and I talked about during the broadcast, you know, off air, was he has an unbelievable ability to sense and read not only the quarterback, but the route progressions and where people are on the field. And the play he made in the divisional round, I think it was the divisional round in cover two, where he goes all the way over to the sideline and gets his hands on a ball. I don't know. I swear to God, Neil, I have no idea how he got over there, because that is absolutely not his play. But he saw where the quarterback wanted to go with the ball. He saw the route progression and just took off and ran. And, you know, it was an incredible, not only athletic play, but an instinctual play.
So, well, just have a little look ahead to the Super Bowl, Jeff, because we're going to dig right into this game next week. But it looks like Carolina are the early favorites, as you would expect. Does it change anything for, you know, to give the hope to the Denver Broncos? If they got to Tom Brady, who holds the ball for, 2.1 seconds, Cam tends to hold it a bit longer than that. I mean, will Denver be thinking, we have an opportunity here on defense because this guy holds the ball a bit more, or is Cam a very different animal?
Well, here's what I think. I think that's a really valid point because he will hold the ball. He's not an anticipation thrower. He's a flash thrower. We call it flash thrower. The route will get open before he'll throw it.
Right.
But he's got such a strong arm, he can get the ball there so fast once he makes his decision to throw. He's not a guy like you watch Aaron Rodgers or Brady throw. They'll throw guys open. They'll throw guys, you know, they almost can anticipate where the route will be open, and they'll throw before the route's even open. Cam's not that guy. So he does have a tendency to hold the ball just a little bit. The issue is going to be now, how are you going to handle him when he starts scrambling around?
Yeah.
Because Denver loves to play man-to-man, and I think this is going to be interesting to see what they do. If they play all that man, then, you know, Cam may hurt him out of the pocket running. Because one of the things I'm sure Mike Shula's getting prepared for is, all right, Cam, against man-to-man, particularly when he sees two high safeties in man-to-man, he now knows there's nobody for the quarterback. So watch out, and if he doesn't just drop back and take off or some of the designed quarterback runs. And I think Denver will counter by twisting a lot inside, which is one of the ways you try and take away the escape lanes from the quarterback.
Yeah, we definitely need to dig into the X's and O's of that next week, Jeff, because I think Carolina, they traditionally like to max protect. That means they're keeping they keep an extra tight end and a running back in. Well, that's seven, plus Cam's eight. That means you've got three receivers out in the patterns. And if you've got Denver able to get home with four, like they were a lot in the AFC Championship game, that leaves seven against three, which means surely you can assign some people to Cam Newton. But we'll see how that plays out.
That's exactly right.
It'll be fantastic. Exactly
right. Those are all the things that we'll, you know, try and get a little feel for when we talk to the coaches next week. Mm. Because it's interesting, you know, when we go do those team interview things, it's obviously everybody tends to run to the players because they want to talk to the players because the players are the most important thing. They're the personalities. But I love going over to the coaches' table because typically there aren't as many people interviewing there, and you really get a chance to talk to them about what they're going to do. Now, they won't give you a lot of stuff, but if you know the way to ask, you're going to hear what you need to hear to be able to get a clue on what they're going to do defensively and offensively in the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, they might not give you that killer quote that becomes part of our pregame show, but they give us insight which you can use within a broadcast and also we can use on the podcast. So I'm with you. I like to dig a little bit deeper. I've got a few questions in the mailbag, Jeff, which relate to the Super Bowl, so we can use those to look ahead a little bit. Andy Cleghorn says, how big is the potential loss of Thomas Davis going to be for Carolina at the Super Bowl? Andy, I think he'll try and play. And this follow-up question from Chris says, Thomas Davis says he'll play in the Super Bowl, but if he's not fit, are Carolina better without him? Get your take on that in a second, Jeff, in terms of Thomas Davis, who broke his arm in the first half against Arizona. But I remember earlier in the year, Luke Kuechly speaking
I think when you talk about a broken arm, the issue is going to be, and again, I haven't seen the x-rays, obviously, but they played it, and then it's going to really come down to his ability to play with pain.
Mm.
And if he can handle the pain, it's not like he's hurt a knee or an ankle or something like that where he can't move. His ability to tackle will be somewhat affected, but they'll pad that thing. I'm sure they'll shoot it, and he'll go out there. I really think he'll play. I just think here's a guy, you know, as you've documented many times, you know, here's a guy that's come off three ACL injuries, and you've been to his own league with a, you know, a broken forearm, keep him out of the biggest game of his life. I don't see it.
No, Jeff, just while I was making, Kuechly said earlier this year that Thomas Davis not only is a great defender in terms of how he tackles, he calls their defensive signals, and he gets, according to Kuechly, he gets that defense in the best possible position from down to down. So even if he's impacted physically, he could still have a significant role to play as a kind of coach on the field.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that his presence is really critical for them. And I think his, not only from, you know, the physical standpoint, because he's such a great player, and the emotional standpoint, because they love him so much, but the strategic standpoint, like you said, getting into the right front, getting the checks, you know, adjusting to the formations and the motions, all of that happens at the linebacker level.
All right, We're going to continue on with some of the questions from the mailbag. Jeff, you're sounding a little bit like a robot now, so I don't know if we've got a ropey signal back to North America, but we're going to plow on anyway. So here's a question from Roger Grace, and it's quite an interesting point that Roger raises. He says, how many interceptions will Peyton Manning have to throw in the Super Bowl before he's benched? I think he's safe, even with a Carson Palmer-esque game. I guess, Jeff, you know, there's two ways of looking at this. I think Peyton's probably absolutely, no one's going to bench Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl in what could be his last game. But the flip side of that is that I think America is so in love with Cam Newton at the moment. He only needs to have 150 yards and one touchdown and maybe run for one touchdown. He's going to be the game's MVP.
Yeah, that's who I picked as the game MVP. Because I think he'll have that kind of game. You know, I think he'll throw for around 200 yards and he'll rush for another 60 and score a touchdown and make a couple plays. And I can't see him having a monster game against Denver's defense, but I can see him doing enough that his team wins. And he's such a focal point that I think, you know, he'll get voted the MVP.
Could you see any scenario where Peyton Manning gets benched?
Me personally, no. Not unless he's hurt. You know, I just think that right now Denver is all in that way, and you know, it's going to be his game to win or lose.
Here's one more question relating to the Super Bowl from Helmet Football UK, who says, "Who is having the most sleepless nights, Jeff? The Broncos offensive coordinator or the Broncos defensive coordinator?" I guess priority number one is stop Cam, isn't it? So it'd be Wade. I don't know.
I think you know, obviously priority number one is you got to stop that offensive unit that's just been so prolific in the playoffs. And you got the best player, probably the best player in the league, the MVP in the league in my vote, at quarterback on the other team. But my guess is Wade's not having any sleepless nights because that's just not Wade's way. I mean, he's working, and he'll be up all hours of the night, and they'll have, you know, he'll watch a ton of tape. But I think he's played against great players before. He's played in big games before. He's, you know, he understands the, you know, that this is for everything. And I think Denver's defense will be, you know, play extremely well. I'll be surprised if they don't.
Well, his message to the team can be, in the last 2 weeks, we've seen off Big Ben and we've seen off Tom Brady. I mean, you know, that caliber wise, yeah, That's pretty good.
Exactly. It's not like they've just been playing, you know, sisters before the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely. A couple of quick questions to finish off, Jeff. Of course, we've got the Pro Bowl on Sunday night on Sky Sports. It's on at midnight. I tweeted this out yesterday. A record 133 players, Jeff, have now been either voted to this Pro Bowl or added as alternates. We're down to quarterbacks are Jameis Winston, Teddy Bridgewater, Tyrod Taylor. Eli Manning is in there, but you know, there's been so many pullouts of this game. And a question here comes from Seahawk Gooner, who says, with all the pullouts, has the Pro Bowl run its course? And if so, what should replace it? And then here's a follow-up from Anders Haywardson, who says, is the Pro Bowl a waste of time? Is it better to have a game to decide the number one draft pick between the two worst teams in the NFL? I don't think the players on those teams would agree with that, but
I don't know. You know, it's. I have such mixed feelings about the Pro Bowl. You know, when the Pro Bowl disintegrated into guys just blatantly not tackling one another as it was a couple of years ago, that's when I said, okay, I've seen enough. Mm. But I still enjoy the Pro Bowl week, and I enjoy seeing the guys together. And I think for the players, the opportunity to be around the guys that you have so much respect for on other teams, all of that is the benefit of the Pro Bowl. And certainly for the fans, it's one last opportunity to see your team or your star play.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. So I think we're pretty much out of time. We look back at the championship games, a little look ahead to the Super Bowl, answered some questions in the mailbag. Plus, you're sounding a bit like R2-D2 and C-3PO's love child at the moment. I don't know what's up with the signal. So I think we'll call it a day there and look forward to Super Bowl. It should be a lot of fun, shouldn't it, Jeff?
You know what? To have an opportunity to do it from Radio Row, video it, send it back to people that they can get it on demand. It's high. They can download it every day. We really have an opportunity to take this podcast where you and I really believe it can go and continue to grow it and make it hopefully one day a show on television of its own.
Absolutely. That's where we'd like to see it in the end. As a program on its own, but we'll keep pushing away and keep trying, and we've got Robot Jeff on the case, so we'll be all right. So until Wednesday of next week, we'll record in Tuesday, and you'll be able to download it on Wednesday. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.